Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Legends of Sport podcast. I'm your host, as always, Andy Bernstein. So, folks, with the Tokyo Olympics in full swing as we release this interview, we're very happy to bring this very timely episode to you with a true legend of Olympic sports, Karch Kirai. Famous for his ever-present pink hat, Karch is the only player in the world to win three Olympic gold medals in volleyball. He won indoors in 84 and 88, and then in 1996 outdoors on the sand in the first ever Olympic beach volleyball competition with partner Ken Steffes. My history with Karch goes way back to the beginning of my sports photography career in the late 70s and early 80s. I photographed Karch indoors as well as outdoors as the sport of beach volleyball was in its infancy on the sand of Southern California. As we learned from previous guest Leonard Armato, who is also responsible for the mediatic rise of the sport, Karch was there from the start. He's been an incredible advocate for the development of volleyball indoors and outdoors. As we speak, Karch is coaching the USA National Women's Volleyball Team at the rescheduled Tokyo Olympics. We spoke about how the pandemic affected training and preparation for his team and himself, as well as so many interesting and timely topics. I hope you all enjoy this episode with Karch Kirai, and as always, I'll see you on the backside. All right, well, listen, welcome, Karch Kirai, to the Legends of Sport podcast. So great to connect with you, man. Thanks for making the time for us today.
Thank you. It's an honor to visit with you.
Thank you, my friend. Hey, Karch, you know, you don't know this, but you and I go back a long way, all right? And we'll get into that in a second, because one of the first things I ever did when I came out here from Brooklyn was to go see the beach volleyball in Manhattan Beach. But before we get into that, all right, I just want to get, you know, in Legends of Sport, we always like to find out where our guests started and how it all, the flame, you know, got lit and everything. And from our crack research, you know, we found out that you grew up at Santa Barbara, right? That your dad, Laszlo, actually played for the Hungarian junior national volleyball team, which is pretty cool. And that you started playing at 6 and competing at 11, right? So talk about that relationship with your dad and how the love for volleyball just ignited inside you.
Yeah, he really infected me with his passion for the game. I'm still crazy head over heels for this game of volleyball today over, you know, about 50 plus years after I started playing with him at 6. He went to school at the University of Michigan. That's where he met my mom. She went there too. And when he was looking to do his internship year of medicine right out of Michigan, University of Michigan Medical School, they wanted to go west. And so they discovered Santa Barbara, fell in love with it. We lived there for a year and he began to teach me how to play. Mostly it was he fell in love with beach volleyball and California, specifically beach volleyball, the two-on-two version, as you first saw when you came out from Brooklyn. And so between games, he would work really hard. Interns got to work 80, 90, 100 hours a week. And on weekends was our time together. We'd go down to the beach. And between games, he still had enough energy that he and I would just bop the ball back and forth. And so we would do that for a number of years, started playing actually two-on-two on a court a few years later when we moved back to Santa Barbara for good and played, read about one of the all-time great USA volleyball players, both indoors, like in the Olympics in 1968, and on the beach, Larry Rundle. And there was a rare Sports Illustrated article on him, and it said he had set the record for youngest person ever to play in a beach volleyball tournament. And so we read about that and said, well, that would be fun to tie that. And so we entered when I was 11 years old, lost out quickly. But it was just such a thrill to be able to, as an 11-year-old, stand toe-to-toe in the novice level, not the highest levels, but the novice level with grown men. So my dad gave me some great gifts in terms of this passion for the game and the experience. Being he was my first teammate, my first coach, and still a huge fan. Both of us are of the game, and he's always been a massive supporter of my career.
Wow. How wonderful. What a great story. That's great.
And the other cool part about it is, because I joke that this is back in the Stone Ages of volleyball, 50, 45 years ago. But when I talk with younger people, obviously as coach of the women's national team, we track players' development. Lots of girls around the country play between the ages of 12 and 18 is the most popular team sport in the United States. That is indoor volleyball. And so they asked me, what club did you play for? And I said, well, when I played, there were no clubs. There was zero club volleyball, zero age group volleyball. I remember playing in one tournament. I think it was a 15 and under tournament. But beyond that, one time in my whole career did I play with younger people. I think that turned out to be a huge advantage. And mainly for this reason, if you're a grown man playing in a novice tournament and you're playing against a scrawny, skinny 11 or 12 year old boy with his father, the last thing you want to do is go back to your friends and say you lost to an 11 year old kid. So they were relentless on me. They went at me, which you can do in 2-on-2 volleyball. If you and I are a team, we can decide, the other team can decide exactly who's going to carry the offensive load because they serve it to that person, first contact, second contact, and then back to that person, third contact. So they were relentless on me, and that was the best thing that could have happened to me. No punches pulled, and I had to hold my own right from the get-go, and I think that was a great gift also, that there was so little age group volleyball.
Yeah, amazing. So, Karch, you got to educate me here about volleyball, because I didn't grow up with volleyball. You know, it was played a little bit in my high school and stuff, but it's such a Southern California, you know, kind of thought. You know, you think of the beach volleyball, you think of the Beach Boys, you think of, you know, surfing, all that, burritos, you know, all that stuff. I didn't grow up with any of that. But my experience is, so I come out here to finish college at Art Center here in Pasadena in 78. And I don't know, the next year or the year after, a buddy of mine says, you know, we're always looking for things to shoot, you know, for assignments and everything. So this buddy, you'll love this. So a buddy of mine says, hey, let's go down to Manhattan Beach. I hear they got a great bikini contest, and they also play some beach volleyball, you know. And I'm like, they play volleyball on the beach? I never even heard of that. So, you know, I'm sure you could relate that everyone basically went down for the bikini contest. There happened to be some beach volleyball going on. I gravitated over there, and then I was mesmerized. I mean, it was just unbelievable. The sport was so foreign to me. That I went back weekend after weekend, and, you know, you were there, all your buddies were there, the women were playing, there was some co-ed matches, and it was all free. You just brought your beach chair or your towel, and that was it. I mean, how does it feel to you that the sport evolved to the point where, and my next part of this diatribe I'm putting out here, is that I'm at the 2000 Olympics, right? And I have a day off at the Olympics. I'm shooting the basketball team. I go to Bondi Beach, and there is plopped down a stadium, you know, not like a bunch of bleachers or anything, an actual stadium on the beach for beach volleyball, right? And you, you know, were there from the beginning. You were like one of the architects of this sport. How does that feel?
Well, there were so many people who came before me. I mentioned one, Larry Rundle, but even before him, people like Bernie Holtzman and Gene Selznick and Ron Von Hagen and Ron Lang and just all of these legends of the sport who played their hearts out in and really built a cult following up and down the coast of Southern California. People would wait all year, would look forward to the one year when the Santa Barbara Open would happen, or the Manhattan Beach Open, or the Santa Cruz Open, or the Laguna Beach Open, all these traditional spots. And so these guys were like gods. And I loved it when they would come to town in Santa Barbara, and I fell in love with what they were doing and how incredible they were at doing it. So that certainly kept me going. And then the next generations came along, people like St. John Smith, and Randy Stoklos and Tim Hovland and Mike Dodd and many, 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 many others. Who, and it all led to a massive spurt of growth in the 80s and 90s, which led to the inclusion of beach volleyball for the first time ever at the 96 Atlanta Olympics. Then you referred to probably the most picturesque Olympics that's ever happened for beach volleyball. And that was in Sydney at Bondi Beach. What a beautiful spot for volleyball.
Yeah.
It immediately turned into one of the hottest tickets mm-hmm. at the Olympics and has been ever since. Mm-hmm. And then Misty and Kerry really helped take it to a new level with three straight gold medals and their dominant performances. But
yeah,
it's been a massive group effort. And so happy with how volleyball, beach volleyball in particular, but also indoor volleyball, as I mentioned, how popular it is, the most popular women's team sport in the country, and how big it is at the NCAA tournament level and club and high school and everything else. It's it's come a long, long way. This is not your grandmother's or grandfather's volleyball.
Exactly. So when you started playing with your dad, I just want to get this straight. You started playing on the beach, like you personally, that was your first taste of volleyball was on the beach, right?
Yep.
So then you move indoors. Of course, it's a two-on-two game. You move indoors. It's a bigger game. It's a whole different game, right? To the point where you end up going to UCLA. I mean, what a run you had at UCLA, by the way. I mean, I'm just going to read this stat, these stats, which you know, but maybe the audience doesn't, but you won three titles there, 79, 81, and 82. You were four-year All-American. This stat blew my mind that at 4 years at UCLA, you went 123-5 with two undefeated seasons in 79 and 82. I mean, that is just epic. Unbelievable.
Incredible. It was kind of par for the course. You know, the other Wizard of Westwood, one of them, of course, was John Wooden.
Right.
The other was Al Skates, who went on to win 19 NCAA championships with his UCLA men's volleyball team. Coach Al has some great stories. For example, the first season he ever coached, I think under J.D. Morgan, the legendary athletic director at UCLA, got him on board for $100 his first his first season as a total salary.
Yeah.
So, of course, he had to keep a real job for many, many years to be able to afford to follow his true passion.
Wow.
And so he was a teacher at Beverly Hills High School. That was his day job. And then he'd sprint over to the UCLA campus in the afternoons and start practice up soon after that. But Al was an absolute legend. That's a big reason I attended the school there, because he was known as such a masterful coach, masterful in terms of preparation, in terms of tactics and strategies, and even in terms of, you know, how to make changes and make key substitutions. He would do things that surprised lots of people that nobody else would have the nerve to do, and they often paid off in better performance to his team. So
yeah,
and he's the start or the roots of a massive coaching tree. So many players from that program have gone on to become great coaches too.
I love that you give the props to your coach. I mean, it all has to start there. You started with your dad, but your coach. And so were there players back in the day, right? When, and I want to get to the Team Cup volleyball experience at the Forum, right? Were there guys that were good only on the sand? They weren't that good indoors and vice versa? Or were you guys just versatile? You can play in both scenarios.
That's a good question. It is very difficult to be a really accomplished player in both versions of the sport. Harry and Misty would be the exception. They were both great indoor players. But in general, people specialize, especially as time goes on. You find more and more that a beach player might be a great beach player and not an international caliber indoors or vice versa. So it's difficult to really excel in both. I'm the only one to win a gold medal or a medal of any kind, I guess, I think somebody else might have won a gold and a bronze in one and then the other. But I'm looking forward to the day that just as Michael Phelps could compete in 8 races in 7 days, if some special player comes along and they structure the schedule right and they could play on alternating days, I'd love to see the day when a woman or a man goes to the Olympics and wins a gold medal in each version in the same Olympics. Yeah. And they're going to come out exhausted, but very, very proud.
Well, couldn't you have done that in 96 in Atlanta? I mean, was that even possible? I don't know what the American indoor team was like, but, you know.
The indoor team had a pretty rough tournament. Mm. But more importantly, the indoor competition happens every other day. And now the beach volleyball competition, at that time in Atlanta, we played every day for about 5 or 6 days. Mm. Now the beach competition actually alternates generally days. So you get a day between. Mm. So that's where I'm looking for, is that they could coordinate those schedules and then the off day fits the other off day. And I want to see somebody go after both. That would be awesome.
That would be unbelievable. Well, it's going to happen, obviously, men or women. Yeah.
So hopefully it's an American. It means more gold medals for our country.
That's right. That's right. I love it. So, Karch, 86, some people that we know very well, people we've worked with, Jeannie Buss, Mike O'Hara, Dr. Buss, Lon Rosen, John Black, you know, all these folks that we've all worked with for years and years. They have this genius idea to bring the volleyball game that was so successful. You guys won the Olympic gold in 84 in LA. I think it was in the Forum. Maybe it was at Pauley.
Sure was.
Yeah. So, hey, let's have a Team Cup volleyball kind of league. Four teams sponsored and all that, and bring it inside. And it was a tough sell, obviously. It was in the summer and, you know, people don't want to go indoors and all that stuff. But what was that experience like for you? I've talked to John Black. We had a great chat about it the other day. And it's a warm memory for me because I used to love going down there and shooting that stuff. But what was it like for you guys? Did you see that as kind of, a stepping stone to making volleyball more legitimate, more commercially viable? How did you look at that?
We too have really fond memories of those 3 or 4 years that tournament happened. It was a great event. They really did put on Jeannie Buss, which I remember John too. They put on a great event, and a lot of the indoor stars and some of the beach stars participated in that. Indoor stars like Steve Timmons, mm-hmm. who is one of the all-time great players. And in fact, that's how he met Jeannie Buss, mm-hmm. and they ended up to go on and get married and be together for a while. But then we also had really fun beach players like Steve Obradovich and Tim Hovland participating. So we had a great blend, and I thought it was a unique aspect because it was mixed. We played with four men and two women, and I thought it was a really good format. The women did fantastic, playing more in the backcourt because the men play with a higher net. It's about 8 inches higher than the women's version of the game. Mm-hmm. But so people had a wonderful time. Not that many people attended, but the people who did were really impressed because the women so held their own there. It's a rare version where you had both men and women on the same team. Mm-hmm. And for decades, people have tried over those decades to try to come up with a successful professional indoor league format. Mm-hmm. And I thought it had some real potential, didn't end up becoming, being sustainable. And so that was one of the many forms that came into existence for a while and then disappeared. We now have a new, and this is women's only, but a new professional league called Athletes Unlimited. They already just ran their inaugural softball season. It was a huge success. And now they're going to run their first indoor women's volleyball season. They're actually going to have four women's professional leagues, and we're cheering them on all the way and hoping that somebody finds that sustainable, repeatable format for professional volleyball. Because as it stands now, all of our USA indoor women's players and all of our USA men's indoor players are not in the country right now. They're all over the world playing in foreign professional leagues. We have people on the women's team in China, Japan, Brazil, Germany, Italy, and Turkey. And but we're excited for the possibility that they may have the choice, that they could play in their own country on certain years with the success of this potential success of the Athletes Unlimited League.
Mm. Well, that's something great to look forward to. I mean, as a, you know, as a dad with a 12-year-old who loves sports, you know, that's great. It just blows my mind, as I'm sure it does you too, and I'm sure you have much more insight than I do, but that the sports that are so popular, volleyball, soccer, right, that have been elevated, you know, through Olympics and look what the women's national team has done for soccer, just can't make it in America. It's just, it's bizarre to me. And, you know, I've talked to many, I know many, and I've talked to many WNBA players who until this new CBA had to go to Europe, as you know, to play, make twice, three times, four times the amount of money in Europe that they made, you know, for the WNBA. In fact, Diana Taurasi, one of the biggest stars of, you know, of the era of the WNBA, had to take a year off because she was making too much money in Europe and she didn't want to get injured to go back to that league. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know what the key is there. I mean, I guess, you know, sports like baseball and football and NBA basketball are just too strong. But what's the key to that? I don't know.
First of all, I think the American professional sports landscape is the most competitive on the planet. When you, all of those sports you mentioned, plus you throw in tennis and golf, right, and then up and coming things like the pro surfing tour and the lacrosse that happens and is much more popular on the East. But there are pro this and pro that everywhere, and it's incredibly competitive. And I'm super happy for the WNBA, but I don't know if they've had many or any seasons where they've actually been in the black or broken even. They're lucky to have a, and I'm super happy for them that they have a partner that has serious financial backing with the NBA. Mm-hmm. Other sports like women's volleyball don't have that. And so that's where it's been a little tougher road to hoe. Or, for example, soccer, because even MLS is not on the level of the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball. So super competitive landscape, but it doesn't mean we're going to stop. That's not going to stop us from continuing to try and carve out these great spaces for women's sports. Of course, you mentioned USA Soccer and all their accomplishments. They're fantastic, winning the World Cup. And super fun to follow. And so we want to be that kind of team in women's volleyball.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. And look what they've done for women's sports, you know, and how now.
Starting in 99, the 99ers, exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also for social justice issues and using their platforms and, you know, just as the NBA players are, WNBA players are. And how is that in your sport? Are your athletes, your women athletes, are they involved in social justice programs, you know, equality and pay and all that stuff? Is that high on the list? Is what you
I think it's
promote?
Become higher on everyone's. It's moved up on everyone's list. It was a few years ago that our largest annual competition in international indoor volleyball is a tournament called Volleyball Nations League. We play in five different countries in 5 weeks, and then finals week in a sixth country. But for the first time ever, just 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, they made the prize money equal between women and men, which was a great step by the International Volleyball Federation. And then, of course, yes, everybody has gotten more active on that front. One thing that our team, our program has tried to do ever since I took over as head coach is one of the things that's really near and dear to my heart is a program called Starlings Volleyball. And it is a program for underserved people who might not be able to afford the normally very high costs of playing junior club volleyball. Those can run $2,000 to up to $7,000 a season, especially when they do a lot of travel and go to the national championships. And so Starlings, and you can find more about them at starlings.org, is a fantastic organization that now has clubs in like 40 different cities around the country, helped over 300 girls win full scholarships to go to play in college and something like 35,000 have participated in that. One of the things I love most about the program mm-hmm. is that once you're done as a Starlings player, you immediately come on and mentor. So you go almost immediately from player to coach. Mm-hmm. And so every year mm-hmm. we operate, our players, our USA players, coach and run a Starlings program mm-hmm. in our own gym in Anaheim as wow. one of the ways that we try to support this great program that was started by a couple of USA legends, and that is Kim Oden on the women's side and Byron Schumann on the men's side. They inaugurated that program in San Diego around 1997.
Well, I love that. Starlings.org. We are going to look yeah. into that, and that thank you for that, because near and dear to our heart here at Legends of Sport is promoting anything that's going grassroots that can help in the inner city. People who don't get access to sports, you know, that we take, I guess we take for granted. You know, I don't want to belabor all your accolades and everything that you've done in your career. I mean, but, you know, you and Kent Steffes, is Steffes or Steffes? Steffes.
Steffes.
Steffes, that's what I thought. So you guys were basically the most formidable duo in the history of the sport, right? I mean, I have two stats here. 93, you won 18 of 20 tournaments. 94, you won 17 of 22. I mean, you were still competing with him like well into your 40s, right? how did that, you know, first of all, have you hung it up? Are you still competing at your age? Or
no, I am not competing.
Yeah.
I played so much volleyball, and I'll preface it by saying I would do it all over again in a heartbeat. I wouldn't change it at all, but I've had both my hips replaced, Oy. One 3 years ago, one year ago. I'm super happy I did it.
Yeah.
The pain I was having is gone. I can play volleyball when I want to or be active. I'm not going to compete in any more tournaments, and I'm just fine with that. But I also want to give some credit out there to others. Certainly, the winningest team ever together is Randy Stoklas and St. John Smith. They're the only team ever to win over 100 tournaments together.
Wow. Yeah.
But Kent and I had some incredible years, and we won that first gold medal
yeah.
that was up for grabs in the 1996 Olympic Games. Kent is one of the greatest players to ever play. We don't, neither of us plays much anymore, and I don't see him a lot, nor he. I'm so busy coaching with the USA women, and he's busy with his family and his other businesses.
Yeah. But I have another stat here that you won at least one tournament in 24 of your 28 seasons of competition spanning four decades. I mean, there aren't too many athletes that could say that.
That one I'm very proud of.
Yeah.
I admire greatness over time. That's what made me so admire like a Michael Jordan or a Kobe or a LeBron mm-hmm. who still just keeps going strong.
Yeah.
And it's not only in those sports. Somebody like discus, Al Horford, four gold medals in four Olympic Games. Those things yeah. are particularly impressive to me. Mm-hmm. And so I am very proud of having won in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and the 2000s to win beach tournaments over basically through two or three generations of top beach volleyball players. And of course, to be able to excel on both sides and play indoors and win a couple of gold medals there too. But mm-hmm. I prided myself on trying to play at a high level for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've certainly admired that in others, in many other sports.
Yeah, well, you brought up Kobe earlier, and this is a perfect segue to him, because you have a quote about the hunger to pursue mastery, and that you are always, as an athlete, you are always hungry to get to a better level. I mean, that is the personification, the definition of the Mamba mentality right there. Had you had the occasion to meet Kobe? Had you guys ever interacted or had any kind of thing going on?
He came, met him a couple of times. He came to speak to our USA women a couple of weeks before the London Olympics.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. He came and did a little Q&A and shared a great story about his daughter. And of course, you're bringing up the loss of Kobe mm-hmm. and sticks with our family, especially because that happened this year on my wife's birthday. And so that was certainly a very different kind of birthday. Mm. Our sons are huge fans of his, who wasn't a fan of Kobe. So feel horrendous for their family's loss. But his legacy, although, of course, ended far too short, is one that everybody who aspires to mastery and high levels of performance has to study closely.
Yeah, for sure. And his daughter, Natalia, great volleyball player. Well, the last thing I wanted to ask you, Karch, was about the postponement of the Olympics, the 2020 Olympics, obviously in Tokyo, was postponed to 2021. How has that affected you personally, your team, training? It just threw a big monkey wrench into everything, I'm sure, right?
You are absolutely right. And I guess I would preface it by saying we are not the only team or group of athletes that is facing this. It's every sport, every country that is qualified or potentially qualified to compete. And many people might not know that in any team sport at the Olympics, you are not guaranteed entry, except if you're the host. You do have to qualify. So I think the initial, after the initial shock or range of emotions, our team has taken the approach that we're really happy to have 12 extra months to sharpen our swords. Initially, though, it's understandable. Some people, for example, felt relief. Maybe they had a serious injury that might not even have allowed them to contend to make the Olympic roster. So they're like, whoa, whew, great. I got an extra 12 months. Others at the other end of the spectrum might have been thinking, wow, I was playing the best volleyball I have ever played in my life. I would have loved to compete this year. Or as you mentioned, maybe people who have a little more miles on the odometer and they're thinking, okay, can I keep the same level or even improve on that, even though I've been playing this game a long time? Yeah. So whatever those individual responses are, we've set those aside. That's the smart thing to do. And just say, look, this is great. Our team has extra time. All the teams, all the athletes will have that extra time. But if we can put that time to better use than our competition, then we can use that as an extra to try to earn an extra small advantage going into the Tokyo Olympics. I would also add that we're excited for Tokyo because Tokyo is the 1964 Tokyo Olympics were the first ones that ever had volleyball. Was where volleyball, indoor volleyball, was added to the Olympic program. So it's super cool.
Yeah.
Even if it's a year later than we thought.
Right.
To go back to the birthplace of indoor Olympic volleyball. And then the other notable thing about 1964 is it was the first Olympics where I guess I would call it a more true team sport for women was added. Before women's soccer, before women's basketball, before women's field hockey, and all the other traditional team sports were added. So that was a milestone also in 1964.
Who
women's team sport added to the Olympic program.
Who won that first Olympics, the men and women?
Japan won it on the women's side. Yeah. No surprise. They were quite good. I think Russia won, or the Soviet Union back then won on the men's side. Since then, lots of different teams have had success, but that is one thing that remains a missing accolade in the women's indoor program. We've won lots of medals. We've competed in 11 Olympic Games, 5 medals out of those 11, 3 silver and 2 bronze, but we're still hungry for that gold. So we're going to keep throwing ourselves at that door and try to break it down, and excited to get another shot at Tokyo.
Well, we are sending you all the best luck, and you know, you got the right guy at the helm, that's for sure. Karch, I wish you the best for your family, but for your team, for the United States. You know, we'll get through this. Hopefully this thing will be in our rearview mirror soon, and there'll be some semblance of normalcy. But anyway, I'm so glad to connect with you, my friend. I actually, to prepare for this, I went deep into my storage room, this is true, and found photos of you from back in the day. you know, pink hat, the whole thing, short shorts, all of that stuff. So we're gonna add that to the video version of this. You'll get a kick out of it. I also found some Team Cup volleyball black and white photos I shot. So,
man, please shoot me a few of those.
Oh, absolutely.
Those are digging back in the day, and those are really fun. Like you said, the short shorts like Michael Jordan used to wear.
Yes, sir, I remember.
And Magic Johnson.
Sure, sure.
We were doing the same thing.
Karch, you're amazing and a true legend of sport, to say the least. I mean, not too many people in any sport have accomplished what you have, and you're still giving back, and you're still involved with the game, and I applaud you for that. But thank you for taking the time with us today.
Thank you so much. It's been great to visit with you. And I wish you and, of course, everybody out there who's listening and watching the best of health.
Thanks, Karch. Take care, man. See you soon. Wow, such a great conversation with the legendary Karch Karai. It was so much fun reminiscing about the beginnings of beach volleyball in Southern California and our mutual history together with the sport of volleyball indoors and outdoors. Wishing Karch and Team USA all the best at the Tokyo Olympics. Thanks, as always, to my producer and researcher, Veronica Ahn, and thanks, everyone, for continuing to download and subscribe to our podcast. A reminder that you can find us on the LA Times app and online, as well as your favorite podcast platforms, including Apple and Spotify. So please keep following us on Instagram at Legends of Sport. Our Twitter is at Legends_of Sport. Our TikTok and YouTube channels are Legends of Sport. And you can find my photography on Instagram at ADB Photo Inc. So thanks, everyone. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another great episode and another great guest. Please keep checking our social media for the announcement. And until then, stay well, stay safe, and keep wearing your mask, okay? All right, bye.